Hello everyone, and welcome back to the third episode in our CI by Industry series. Representing the world of healthcare technology, today we've got Chris Link. Chris is Research and Insights Manager at Interlace Health, a business that pioneered e-form and e-signing technology back in the day, and today makes it its mission to develop software that streamlines and makes digital the tricky yet critical job of admin in healthcare. In today's episode, we discuss how Chris uses what he calls data packs to deliver a one-stop resource for anyone looking to bring themselves up to speed on a competitor, why it's critical to test your deliverables at different screen resolutions, particularly for sales, and why manually sifting through a lot of data can be the best thing you can do for your success in CI. Let's welcome Chris Link. Chris, welcome to the show for what is the third episode in the CI by Industry series. You're here to represent B2B healthcare tech.
Yes, I've been in healthcare tech for about 10 years for both like the health plans in the US and more recently hospitals, like acute care providers primarily, but really covering all of healthcare delivery in the United States and a little bit in Canada.
Got you. Okay, so 10 years, that's a pretty long time. Would you like to give us a bit of a look into your journey through competitive intelligence, some of your background in that? Because everyone always says, you know, you don't go to school for competitive intelligence, you kind of fall into it. What did that look like for you?
Yeah, falling into it's a good way to put it. It was an absolute accident. I went to school for psychology originally. Then I went to get an MBA with a focus on market research because I had the stats background. I thought I would carry it over, try and figure out what I could do with a psych degree that wasn't going to 4 to 6 more years of school, which I ended up doing anyways, getting an MBA just a couple of years. And just happened to have a couple of contract positions and then ended up in healthcare. And it was a classic, you know, you don't always fall into competitive intelligence as a title. It's often like what market intelligence or something like that that's much broader. And that's what happened. I fell into that with a company that was called MDON at the time, now Change Healthcare, now Optum, which is part of a big giant United Health group. So it just has kind of kept growing and growing. And that's where I really cut my teeth on the entire CI thing. I hadn't even heard of it before I joined that market intelligence team and went from just being a market researcher to more of an analyst to understand the competitive aspect and how to just hit all the notes that were needed for sales teams, product teams, marketing teams, execs, all of that.
Awesome. All right. So you're currently at Interlace Health, one of the pioneers of e-forms and e-signatures and stuff like that, if I recall our previous conversation. Just before we get into the details of how you do competitive intelligence, can you tell us a bit more about Interlace? Give us a bit more information on what it is you guys do?
Yeah, our founder, Rob, 30 years ago, I think was, I don't know if he was sitting around or at a hospital for a doctor's appointment and saw everything was happening on paper. Everything was really hyper manual. Not that it isn't today, but it was just a mess of paper and fax machines and all sorts of just inefficiencies and people couldn't read stuff and decided like, hey, why can't we do this better? Why can't we make things a little bit more digital and move in that direction? And it went from very simple things from printing to what we have today, which is completely replacing anything that is paper with a digital form, with these signatures. And anyone who's super into healthcare or especially in the American healthcare system knows that things are ridiculously complex here, unnecessarily complex sometimes. I think the estimates are like 30% of anything of the money is in administration and a lot of that, administrative waste, I should say. And so what we're doing is trying to tackle that and eliminate it. And, you know, there's other people doing it now, but no one's been working with hospitals for 30 years to do what we're doing. So we have kind of a leg up in understanding the workflows, the challenges, the problems there. And relevant to this conversation is that market has shifted over the last few years. It used to be a few known people, and now it's been changing quite a lot. It's part of my job to make sure we're not thrown for too much of a loop as that environment changes.
Awesome. Great stuff. So here's kind of where I just ask a few kind of rapid fire questions to give our listeners a bit of context around how competitive intelligence is set up where you are. So the team, how big is the team for you, first of all? Just you or a few people?
Yeah. So we are, take what I said before in this context, we are a about 65 person company. So we are a very small company. So it is, I would say it's 1.5. So I'm the lead for all of market intelligence. But then I do tap resources. Like, we have a really great director of product marketing strategy who has shown a lot of interest in the work. So she does, when I'm over capacity, I can also often tap her to support things. And then just a great network of people who have been very engaged in bringing me information as they're encountering it in sales deals, trade shows that I'm not at, things like that. So yeah, just me for the most part, but people have really been very supportive.
Cool. Small and mighty team follows the norm then for the most part, I think.
Seems to be.
Which stakeholders are you serving primarily?
The obvious ones, yeah, sales all the time, marketing to a lesser degree, but they're absolutely an audience. Most of what I do rolls up into our president and into what is here kind of called our chief commercial officer. So he might be a CMO at another organization, but he oversees sales, marketing, and business development. So I end up working a lot with him as we're doing like market exploration and different exercises. But yeah, really it's the C-suite is the main audience for what I do.
Okay, that's good to know. So C-suite leadership, sort of CCO as perhaps a primary stakeholder, product marketing and sales, you said you're a team of one, sort of one and a half, and the sector or industry is B2B healthcare tech. Okay, cool. So one thing that seems to be unfolding, at least for me, as I kind of chat to more people about this, is in some industries anyway, people have said, you know, it maybe doesn't even really make sense to think about competitive intelligence as a process. It's something that's too ad hoc, too reactive to kind of think about in terms of these like repeatable aspects. And that kind of got me thinking. And at least what I'd like to ask you to start off with then really is, would you say you have a process for competitive intelligence, first of all, like in the traditional sense or in a most basic sense, or is it in practice for you so much more fluid than that, that you never really feel you're doing the same thing twice?
Mm-hmm. It's really changed over the years that I've been doing this. And at Interlace, I'd say, you know, overall, I am a very process-oriented person. And so I build everything, you know, has comes into a process at some point. I think I even said in a meeting this week, there are few business problems that can't at least be partially solved with a half decent process that you stick to. Not that you want to stay static, but you know, you need something to sink your teeth into. So for competitive intelligence work and, you know, broader market intelligence to that effect as well, I think at least having some type of cadence you're hitting so that there is an expectation in the organization that you are doing these things, you are delivering these things. You may not always have a wow moment every month, because I try to do a monthly sort of intelligence meeting for leadership and a few of the directors of the company just to get them up to speed on some things. You don't always have that wow moment, but at least saying, hey, it's going to be a short meeting this week. We've got just a few things to cover. Here's some stuff I think you should know. And then here's some ongoing programs, processes. You know, the best example is I would consider a fairly rudimentary win-loss program running with our sales team. So it is really just them, when they close a deal, win or loss, I have a somewhat extensive survey I built with our VP of sales to just collect information. Now, I like to be pragmatic. I know that 50% of the information on there is probably wrong. I live with that. I put that caveat out there, but at least it gives us something to chase down and something that it's reliable. Sales sees, they have an input. It goes into, call it my black box, and then there's an output, and they can at least see that we're talking about things, we're thinking about things, and there's something going on. So it's not just what I used to run into. And I think this is common maybe for any CI person joining an organization that may have not had a intelligence function. Nobody really knows what you do. And sometimes that can go on for a long time. And so it's very important for me give myself a lot of time within a year to say, okay, people actually, when they see me at a team meeting, it's like, oh, it's Chris. Here's what he actually does. We understand that now. And so that's where having some kind of process where there's like a definite input output, even if it's not always the best thing, at least it's something that's advancing the conversation. So not publishing garbage. I never want to put out something that's not worth their time, at least a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Cool. Well, that's good to know for me. It makes my job a little bit easier. As the listeners might know by now, you know, this sort of CLI by industry series really is about making these conversations as comparable as possible by kind of walking step by step through those processes where it's possible, if they exist, with that being, you know, a kind of pretty big caveat. So, yeah, interesting points about, you know, setting expectations with everybody by sticking to a particular frequency. The things that you're pushing out there, monthly intel meetings, the leadership, win-loss programs. We'll dig into all of that, I think, in a bit of detail in a little bit. But let's get into the details of that process then. So if you don't mind, we'll kind of start with stakeholders first. So you said you're obviously serving sales always, marketing sometimes, your president and sort of CCO leadership sort of stakeholder set as well. So what do they tend to expect from you? I guess a reasonably broad question. What do they tend to expect from you in terms of deliverables?
Yeah. So for, let's say for the, at the C-suite level, so we're, you know, again, not a huge company. So we're really talking about here, the president, the chief commercial officer, and our chief product officer. Those are going to be that audience of three. And it really is a little bit different, but quite a lot of crossover for each of those. These people have a lot of different demands, a lot of different responsibilities. So having things that are very much to the point, there's lots of detail in footnotes. I mean, I've kind of switched to, here's a super light version. If you want the detail, it exists, and it's at your fingertips. But they need, like, what is my takeaway? What can I actually do about it? I mean, that's what it is for that group. If I'm not going to be bringing something that they can take and do something with, there was really no point in me bringing it to. They would have rather be focused on doing something else. And usually for them, that's going to be, hey, is there a, you know, is a competitor going to be going up, you know, for sale, which is happening a lot in healthcare, in the B2B tech space. A lot of merger, a lot of acquisition, especially coming out of the pandemic where nobody was buying, hospitals had no money to purchase. Now all of the VC-backed guys are, you know, a lot of those are struggling. A lot of the traditional players who are smaller are trying to find partners to work with. So a lot there to just say, okay, what can we do with this? A little bit different on the product side, because that's where I'm working more to in the traditional kind of market research space to help them do the product roadmap and things along those lines. So maybe, hey, this competitor is adding an enhancement, or here's a feature that electronic health record company is implementing and they've been starting to talk a lot about. So for them, for product, a little bit more, hey, FYI, this is happening so that you're aware of how it may impact our roadmap, or if we're going to suddenly find ourselves behind on functionality.
And how about sales, lastly?
Sales, yeah. So the win-loss, as I mentioned before, I've really, over the last couple of years, been doing a lot more with data visualization. So Power BI, because we, like so many other companies, we have the whole Office 365 suite. I think they changed the name recently. But using that, and so having Power BI on tap, being able to put together a dashboard, stick it right in the Microsoft Teams where everyone's living every day anyways, and serving it up to them so they can actually go in, cut by their territory, see, you know, if there's a hospital or health system that may be using a competitor, they can go into the dashboard, cut it down to their territory, see the competitors, see what health record system the hospital has been using, and go into a meeting a little bit more educated, at least. You know, we may not have the deep intelligence all the time because there's, you know, 8,000 something hospitals. It's not really possible, but at least they go in educated, and that's always my goal. And then battle cards, absolutely. I think it's hard to find a CI function that's not producing battle cards to some degree. For us, it is very much me working directly with the VP of sales to say, okay, what's actually going to be in here that your team can use? Like, how do they communicate or absorb information? Because, I mean, that's what a lot of this is how does each individual stakeholder absorb and learn? And then trying to figure out how I can get kind of the right average output that they'll all be able to kind of take in their own way. Because if someone's going to read, I still have to produce something that someone else is going to read. So how do I get this other person to absorb it as well? That's maybe the biggest challenge with getting things to stakeholders is so many personalities, even at a small company.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Like, you know, even if you produce the perfect battle card for, you know, John over here, maybe Claire doesn't work very well with it and needs like a completely different format.
Or yeah, John wants to, John, for example, he's only going to open on the phone. So if I can't produce anything that's readable on his phone, I know he's never going to read anything that I put out there. So how do I even think about how it's going to display in a mobile device? So that's something I never thought about a few years ago, is testing readability at different resolutions.
Yeah, that's actually something that's never come up on the show before either, but that's a super interesting point. Like, you know, if you'd have the best battle card in the world, but if they can't read it on the device they're using, you know, it's even if they do pull it up, it's not going to be of any use.
Yeah, when you spend your time working at a company that specializes in forms, you start thinking about readability of thing on of paper on screens.
Right, and how do these, you know, so we've got these different sets of deliverables. We've got, you know, battle cards, Power BI dashboards for sales. You know, you've got the more individualized expectations of the sort of president, CCO. So you've got all of these different kind of expectations. Are these kind of sort of passive expectations that you have to meet? Are you pushing information either directly at them at a particular frequency, like you mentioned earlier, or perhaps somewhere centralized, like a battle card where they can pull it when they need it? Or is there also an element of every day that you've got requests landing kind of on your desk and you're prioritizing and dealing with those one by one as they come in as well?
So really with a lot of what comes in is I just have range to do what I kind of need to do. So there are expectations. You know, we have like, hey, here are the goals we're hitting. Cause I report up into the chief commercial officer. It always throws me off. CCO is something I'm not always used to. So there's expectation setting, like here's what we're trying to achieve this year, and you know, where are we going to need support, where are we struggling, and prioritizing from there. We actually, and this is very different than every other job I've had in CI in healthcare, is that they really don't want to be throwing things on my desk randomly, like just pitching stuff at me. They want me focused on, you know, supporting more strategic initiatives within the company. So if they're throwing a lot of little things at me all the time, asking random questions, which absolutely happens, but we definitely try to constrain that, where I'm used to it being quite the opposite. So that's been a bit of an inversion from what I'm accustomed to.
Okay. So, right, we'll bear those deliverables and those sets of stakeholders in mind and move on to data. So first off, to avoid making it too broad of a question, just generally, what kinds of data or intel are important to you in, you know, B2B healthcare tech?
With the groups that we kind of run up against, so we're looking at e-signature and digital forms and the EHRs, most of these companies have a fairly limited public presence, which is always tricky. You have some information, most of it, you know, there's a lot of either they're very private and they've been private companies for a long time, regardless of their kind of wealth, or they're VC backed, so they're pretty young and they're just, you know, there's a lot of private deals going on. So data on competitors is always the absolute trickiest thing. I mean, it frustrates me so much because our primary competitor, the one who's been around, we've been around for 30 years, they've been around for 20, I don't know, they have a history of seeing what we do and then they start doing it. They have such little information out there. They don't do press releases. They'll do marketing videos, they'll do blogs, but they just have no sophisticated kind of modern media presence, which is kind of abnormal. But that is weirdly typical in this space. So now that we have companies like DocuSign, Formstack, whatever coming in, it's actually a bit of a relief to me because these people have, like, people talk about these companies. They have public record. So being able to kind of dip back into that public information, you know, the 10-Ks and all that good stuff, the tax information and the SEC filings is relief. And beyond that, there are a few good data sources that kind of make everything for me. So there's the American Hospital Association, which does good data products. And then there's Definitive Healthcare, which is like the data provider for healthcare information in the United States. If Definitive doesn't have it, then it either typically doesn't exist or is just too inefficient to get your hands on. So when you need information about, hey, what's the tech stack look like at a given health system, Definitive is going to have some idea because they've gone out, they've actually done that information gathering, the interviews, the conversations, collected a lot of that. So there's a lot of that baseline can come from them. And then I rely a lot on CMS. So that's the Center for Medicare, Medicaid Services, the government healthcare programs in the United States. They publish a ton of information. So you end up having to do a lot of math to like, okay, if they're doing this rate for Medicare, what's it going to look like on the commercial side? So there's a lot of pulling a whole bunch of different databases, having them all talk to each other, and then trying to pull those bits and pieces of knowledge you can from news sites. And the big thing that I've been working on with marketing lately has been using a lot more SEO data, back-end SEO data, to say, hey, okay, well, you know, let's look at the purchasing. Let's look at their purchasing habits for paid search and different things to see where these companies who don't have a public presence are actually spending money in the back end to get an idea of where they may be going. So that's actually been a really great thing that we've been integrating this year is some SEO discipline, not just for our company from a marketing angle, but also where can we apply it to just being smarter and knowing, oh, hey, you know, DocuSign is here, but like their web traffic for healthcare is so low, we actually shouldn't be that worried about it right now. Like, monitor for change, but they're getting, you know, I don't know the top of my head, so I'm making this up, but they're getting like 12 hits a month off of like these super hot keywords for our space. Maybe when we see them at a trade show, we're just like, ah, yeah, DocuSign's over there. They really can't help you. It gives us some confidence. So a little bit of a scattershot answer, but that's kind of what it is for me a lot of times. It's just just gathering things left and right and then trying to make sense, build up a narrative that is true to the information.
Yeah, sure. And you mentioned, you know, like in between those, I guess those are larger scale publications of kind of like vetted data that you can really rely upon, like the databases and the government sources and stuff like that. You know, you're kind of pulling bits and pieces where you can, I imagine, to kind of fill in the gaps. What does that process look like for you? Is that more or less automated, or is it? Is there quite a lot of manual time that goes into that?
I try to do a bit of both for different reasons. So for the kind of competitive intelligence side of my job, I automate it as much as possible. Being able just having the keyword set up, having the key company set up, pulling the information in, trying to hit on a new competitor. As I mentioned earlier, we are seeing new companies sort of trickle into our space and look to gain some market share. And that was not happening 5 years ago. It wasn't even really happening 3 years ago. It's sort of a pandemic era thing that we're seeing in our space. So I do need that automated process. There's too much to comb through. Having been so reliant on kind of that news curation for years that you get from a lot of different CI platforms, I've started seeing as I transition to focusing more on that SEO side this year, I've actually felt a little bit more confident because I'm going more to the source and it tells me more what they're doing and they're focusing on. Now, if they have really bad SEO strategy and it's not telling me anything, well, I'm still learning something because I know they're really crappy at optimizing their website and their presence, which is beneficial to us. So there's still learning to be had. I do ultimately end up reading a lot manually just because I'm also responsible for understanding what things mean. So if there's a new trend that's really getting a lot of steam in healthcare, I need to understand it. I need to be able to explain it to stakeholders across the company so that if a customer comes to us or a prospect comes to us and says, hey, we're thinking about launching like a hospital at home program in the next 8 months, can you guys help us with that? If they don't know if they've heard of hospital at home or they don't know details about it, we may lose out on a sale or we may kind of lose out on an advocate, you know, word of mouth marketing, which is pretty huge, even in something as the size of the US healthcare system. It's still fairly small in terms of people and kind of the community. There's a lot of connection there. So I do have to have that understanding still. So I can't automate all of it due to kind of the other section of my job, but I do what I can.
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right? Like as you say, like there's so much coming in, like, you know, we know from hearing feedback from the community that, you know, newer competitive intelligence practitioners, they do struggle with a bit of overwhelm in terms of like, how on earth do I stay on top of all of this stuff coming in? And, you know, if you can at least automate the kind of the net that catches it, I guess, to some degree, then even if you have to pass through a lot of it yourself, eventually you do reach a point where you get very good at kind of recognizing what's relevant and what's not. You can quickly sort of comb through it and thought, okay, like here's where my attention needs to go. And one more question on that then. Customer research, how much does that kind of form, I guess, aside from the win-loss analysis that you said that you do, perhaps for like informing product, you know, the product roadmap for the product team, does customer research come into it much or at all? And if so, is win-loss the only way you get that customer research, or are there other kind of surveys and interviews going on?
I think it's interesting because you and I did not talk about this particular question beforehand. And it just so happens that the last couple of weeks, we've been working very hard on revamping our entire product roadmap process to tighten it up for some of those reasons, because we don't want to be spending time on things that don't have value to the market or are going to be really difficult for us to do. So having that connection to the customer and getting the regular feedback from them is something we've been trying to do. I mean, I was partially brought on board to help us do better kind of qualitative research with our customer base and do it more consistently and add a little bit more rigor to it. You know, I can't do it all on my own. So it ends up like, okay, let me coach our client services team on how they can ask better questions and different things along that line to get the information we need. So yeah, that is absolutely part of what I do. We still, in my opinion, don't do it enough, but it's more capacity and not just our capacity, but our customers' capacity. I mean, we are talking to IT and clinical staff at hospitals. These people have come out of a few tough years, and you know, margins are just beginning to turn around for hospitals in the United States. They've been operating at negative margins for 2-3 years now. And we're just really seeing the improvements, and they're starting to be able to breathe a little bit. But at the same time, there's massive staffing shortages that they're experiencing. So that is maybe the biggest challenge right now, is finding a way to say, hey, it's going to be worthwhile to talk to us. Because if they're talking to us, it means they're not either delivering care to a patient or they're not optimizing a system to deliver care to a patient. And we don't want to be a barrier between them and care delivery. That's the last thing. We want to be doing quite the opposite. We want to be making that easier. So yeah, we absolutely aim to do a lot of that information gathering. Doesn't happen as much as we like for a number of very good reasons. Hopefully, as we have better technologies coming through, I mean, AI may help relieve some of the pressure on time. We hope our solution is, you know, relieve some of the pressure on their time. We can get back to having more regular conversations, because that really is where we're going to learn about the next big thing for us, and honestly get a lot of good competitor information, because a lot of our customers really love us, or they changed from a competitor to us and like us better. And so just having that relationship with them often gives me some of the best sort of hands-on kind of human intelligence that I'm just never going to get anywhere else. Even our sales team struggles to get their relationships.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about your answer there is you're clearly very aware of the kind of like slower kind of almost macroeconomic trends going on in your industry, in terms of like hospitals have been operating on negative margins for the last few years. Those are starting to turn around. That has like these implications for the work that we're doing. Is that something that you kind of pick up almost by osmosis, kind of passively, just as a result of doing the work day to day and seeing those things play out? Or is there some active intent behind, I've got to figure this stuff out, how do I do it? Because I imagine for people who are new, that's something that they certainly don't have yet and would probably quite like to have if they could. Is it something that is just, hey, you've got to just wait and you'll pick it up with time, don't worry about it too much? Or is it the opposite, like here are some things that you can do to pick up that understanding more quickly?
You're going to get some of it passively, without a doubt. If you're just doing kind of the regular keeping the pulse on the industry you're covering, you're going to pick up some of that. But the problem is it's typically incredibly dense. I mean, this year I spent a lot of time, I always read regulations and things happening and policy changes in the US. I've been doing a lot of reading on digital healthcare initiatives in the NHS and the UK this year, and been learning that, hey, it's no less complex across the Atlantic. So no relief there. But I do think you have to seek it out on your own to some degree. You need some interest in the economics of it, in the policy of things. The more you understand the roots of why things are happening a certain way, the more context you then have to take any competitive or market information you're gathering that's more direct to your everyday, putting that in context and saying, here's why this is happening. So if you're giving a battle card to a salesperson and, they're wondering why a competitor is launching a certain product that automates something that feels obscure. I'm avoiding giving a very specific example, so that's why I'm kind of thinking through, because I'm trying not to give something away. You can say, well, it's because of the following reasons. We have this understanding. I think there's some equivalency, but it's a little bit more daunting in the U.S. in that not only do you have Health and Human Services and CMS who are putting out policy and things and really having a huge impact on the economics of healthcare through reimbursement changes for Medicare and Medicaid, you have 50 different discrete entities that have their own regulations in the states that are doing things each a little bit differently. Plus you have Indian Health Services, the IHS, which has a whole different grouping of things to serve the Native American population in the US. And of course, I think all the different branches of the NHS all have their own there's some overarching things, so it's like here, but they all have their own processes as well. I know Scotland is different than Wales, which is different. I told my folks, like, hey, don't even worry about Northern Ireland. I'm sure they're great, but like they have their, everything's a little bit different than everything else over Northern Ireland. So just, we'll figure that out later. It is trying to absorb all that in a short amount of time. I think you have to have some interest in it and you have to want to build that up. Because reading through proposed rules, it'll put you to sleep unless you start thinking about how it connects to the economics of things and the greater picture and how it's going to affect your customers. Because that's, even if you're, a lot of times I think in competitive intelligence, we are always like, our customer is XYZ, and it's usually the sales team or whatever, but our customer is still the company's customer ultimately. Like, whatever we're doing is to help the company, to help the customer at the end of the day. So remembering and contextualizing things in that way, I feel like sometimes is forgotten. Last soapbox moment. One thing is I don't always feel like CI professionals get to spend enough time seeing how customers are using the products. When you're in B2B, I think it's very, very different in the B2C space, but like going onto a customer site with an implementation team and seeing those things happen can help you learn how to ask better questions or phrase them in a way that makes more sense to an audience because you've been on site with them. So I'll wrap it up because that could be just the whole rant of mine about getting hands-on with things.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good answer about, yes, you will pick up some of the some of that broader market intelligence by osmosis, but you do have to dig into it a little bit yourself. Like it reminds me of in sports or anywhere in business, if you're going to get a competitive advantage, even as an individual in a team competing against another, symmetrical team in another company or equivalent team in another company, often it comes down to being willing to do what they're not willing to do, right? And if that's dig into some kind of dry material about statistics and information on like the market and the economics of things, and you're willing to do that, and you can force yourself to think about the implications for what you're doing and how that will give you an advantage, and they don't do it, then that's just one more way that you're elevating yourself above them, I suppose.
What you said, you talk about some of the you're talking about dry material when you mentioned diving into like kind of deeper statistics. A question that I've gotten asked a few times over the years, and I've heard asked to other CI professionals, is like, and I think you even kind of referenced a little bit in the beginning, like, how do you get into competitive intelligence? I mean, there's a few programs now, and at least I know there are in the US that specifically focus on it, but what do I study in school to actually move into a space like this? And it is that not just being able to get into those kind of scientific papers, but knowing how to actually read and evaluate them. People who have that background, it doesn't have to be hard science. It doesn't have to be, probably even is better if it's not biology, chemistry, but like my background in psychology in school, I'm not a psychologist anymore, professionally, I can't call myself that, But I do have an understanding for how to read a scientific paper, how to evaluate if it's worth reading, how to evaluate the outputs and the discussion. Finding people coming out of a grad program, undergrad program, whatever, if you're looking to grow a CI program, with the ability to have that kind of, not just be able to look at media critically, which is one thing that's really important, but be able to look at scientific research from usually, you know, soft sciences, hard sciences, whatever, and have a decent grasp and be able to translate that and think that something that matters is super, super important. And I think absolutely a critical skill set that I would, if I were putting a job description together to hire someone, I would be building that into it.
Yeah. That's definitely an interesting one. Right. Okay. I want to just orient quickly, just so just for the sake of the listeners. So, just to recap quickly, we've got, you know, a reasonably broad set of stakeholders in, you know, the trio of chief commercial officer, chief the chief product officer.
I've got chief product officer. Yeah, we don't do normal C titles here. We just like to mix them up. Yeah.
Cool. And the president as well. Then there's sales. There's product. There's marketing also. You know, in terms of data sources, you mentioned, you know, there are some pretty official databases and reports, I suppose, on, you know, your industry that you rely on quite heavily. And then you fill in the gaps with some other stuff. You're going to dive into some more customer research, you know, as you continue building things out. Let's go back to that process just purely from like a practical standpoint. So as you've got all this data coming in, you mentioned, you know, it's automated wherever it can be, and there's some manual kind of parsing through as well. First of all, I guess, where does the data kind of arrive in all its kind of disparate forms? And is there some way you kind of put it to centralize it or keep it organized, I suppose?
It's not as organized as I would like it to be honest. And maybe it never will be. So typically I am working towards, like, I have quarterly or whatever two quarters would be called, half a year. I don't know. I honestly don't know what you'd call that. But you know, I have like discrete projects and targets for those things. So normally when I'm gathering that data, I'm doing it for those things. So I want to pull the freshest data and get my hands on. So when I'm looking at starting with things, I'm usually getting absolute the freshest data I can get from Definitive is, because they are have the regular update cadence. So what I pulled 6 months ago is going to be different than what I would pull today. So I want to make sure I have the most recent data. Really easy to do. I mean, they have a report builder. I have all my things preset. So I just do click, 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 and I can download a fresh database. Usually it's just like a CSV file. And then I'll do the same thing from our own Salesforce database. So we've got a lot of, you know, so I have our customer information, things we've gathered. So there's, you know, notes, all those sort of things. Often first thing I do is go into Power BI and I marry those two databases and compare them so that I can just get kind of foundational information. And then from there, it is depends on exactly what I'm researching, what I may need to just kind of pull in it from there. Because I've got all these provider identifiers and all sorts of numbers that I can use across all these different databases, which is really fortunate that everyone is using some common codes. So I can have all those relate to each other, start pulling out, you know, very current insights based on a particular market question I may be getting or a particular goal we have. I think that the trickiest part and the part that's the messiest is anything that is not already being pulled in a spreadsheet that I'm having to actually put together myself in the format that it takes. So those are the things that I'm getting from like a CI platform or pulling myself and trying to structure and organize, or if it is like a survey or other thing that I've done, or if I've worked with a CI consultant who's kind of done some deeper dive stuff with competitors that I can't do. I mean, that's all the qualitative stuff that I'm trying to lay over top of it. So it maybe doesn't have to be as managed. I dream of becoming kind of a master at SQL or Python or R. Some point I'll have time to do that. That might make my life easier. But right now it is just like, okay, let's get the freshest data. Let's point things in the right directions in my data viz tool so that I can build a dashboard, tell a story, and then add in that qualitative data over top to sort of make the case for what I need to be making a case for or against.
You mentioned in the beginning some of that win-loss data that comes in. You just kind of assume, okay, there's a portion, maybe a large portion of this that might not be accurate. We're just going to go with that because, you know, it gets us closer to kind of the end goal, if you like. Is there anything that you do with maybe other kinds of qualitative data that are coming in to kind of verify more or less that it's accurate? Or do you kind of take that same approach with the rest of the qualitative data that's coming in?
Well, in terms of the win-loss surveys, I mean, the qualitative stuff there is coming direct from the salesperson. And they're salespeople, so they have no problem being frank with me. I'm surprised there's not more curse words in their responses than there actually are. So if I do have, as I read those comments, if I do have follow-ups, I will, you know, go over Teams, give a call, whatever, and get some more context from them. Because sometimes it is less certainty, sometimes like, oh, no, actually, you know, such and such role actually told me this directly and they just didn't put it in there. So there's usually a little bit more to dig into that they just didn't think to write down in a survey field. Like, dude, the win-loss survey is all automated through. I use a platform called Question Pro and it ties into our Salesforce instance. So when they close things, it's all automated, just delivered to their inbox. They can just click it, do it real quick, submit it, and I have easy access to it. But other than that, it's pretty standard market research practices. You know, you're going through the coding process of, oh, here are the themes that are in this particular open-ended response, labeling those myself. I've started getting to play around a little bit because I don't want to put any of this online and it's kind of high risk, but using some of the AI tools to do that text analysis for me, which is such a massive, talk about time saver, not having to sit there and do manual coding of 100 whatever different open-ended responses and just having someone, a machine go through and say, yep, here's the big themes, here they are, serve them up to me. And then it saves me so much time. And it's sometimes better than what I would do on my own just because it's averaging everything together. So that's actually been a really great thing. And I actually really am excited for what type of like real kind of AI applications we could have in CI. I mean, we do have quite a lot. I feel like a lot of times CI tech can be ahead of the curve for other people because we're just, at least the way it used to be, is a lot of the stuff that was happening with like a CIA or something will come slowly trickling over once a statute of limitations is up or whatever. And like, oh, hey, this text analysis stuff is pretty cool. It's like, yeah, we use that to overthrow the old Ukrainian government. I'm like, oh, okay. That's actually the first CI conference I ever went to, one of the presenters was involved in one of the popular Ukrainian like government uprisings that happened years and years, like back in, sometimes like I think the 2000s or something. I can't remember the detail, but he was like, yeah, I was working with the opposition leader and here's the tools we use to actually analyze the government's, like, you know, what the government was doing and what the social buzz was around. And we actually manipulated social media to help like destabilize the government. I'm like, oh, and we can just buy this now? That's cool. I feel like it doesn't happen as much anymore. There's more tools built specifically for like commercial competitive intelligence, but I do know some of that stuff probably still trickles over. I got a little bit lost in that story because it's so surreal to think back on it.
Oh yeah. Oh man. Yeah, I mean, sometimes like stories like that make me think that, you know, our community's acronym, Competitive Intelligence Alliance, is just not, it's not a mistake at all.
Oh, no, I thought it was, I assumed it was intentional. I was like, that's fun. I'm glad someone did that. I was really like, they're killing it over there.
Oh, good. Right, so let's transition then a little bit into, so you've sort of got all the data you need. What comes next? What's the process, if you like, for sort of going from raw information to something you can then go and deliver to, you know, leadership or sales or marketing? What's the analysis process, I suppose, if there is one?
I have a really kind of weird whirlwind approach. I just like to gather. It's almost like if it were paper, or if you picture any of the crime dramas where they have all the stupid red string going everywhere, those mind map things. That's kind of a bit like how I take everything. So even the data thing, like I'll just have questions, I'll go back and I'll query my database, or I'll try to do different comparisons. But it really is like, okay, let's start taking all the different pieces. Let's see where the connections are. You know, are there trends that are related here? You know, go peek at the SEO data, see if that's changed from where it was, you know, see if their website traffic has changed. I love the website change and tracker capabilities that some, you know, platforms are putting out. Ultimately, I know that whoever I deliver this to is they're going to struggle to read, not because it's dense or complex, but just because they're busy and their minds are distracted and sitting down and reading a report is the last thing they're going to do. So trying to figure out what the key things they're actually going to be used. And I mentioned earlier, like delivering something, if it's something they can pick up and do something with and take an action, it's not really useful for them. I can go, oh yeah, that's fun. And my job is to give them things that are fun. It's to give them things they can work with. So how much can I take all of this kind of whirlwind I've gathered and, you know, cook it down so that it is just kind of the richest content that they can actually do something with. And I try to have it be as visual based as possible. You know, the discipline is that I picked up at a prior job, and I've sort of copied the methodologies, is these things that they call, my old company, and I call data packs, which are, it's basically, you know, a booklet that's like, if you need answers, if you go through this, you're going to find the answers you need, and have it be indexed, have it almost be like a little textbook, but everything is set to there. You're going to learn really one or two things per page. So if you just need one topic, you need to learn about XYZ, you go to that section, you're going to see the two things you need to know to make a decision or to help you, you know, contextualize your decision, and then you can move forward. You don't have to sit there and read a whole report. You don't need to sit there and decipher everything. If you need more context, if you need more detail, you give me a call, you send me a message on Teams, we'll talk through your questions, we'll figure out what your gaps are, and we'll go through those. So I kind of had to learn the good enough approach to a lot of things that I would put out, because you want to be valued, but you if you try and get it exact, or you try to get close to perfect, you're either not going to get out the door, or I feel like you lose some of the thread, you lose some of the urgency. But if it's good enough, sometimes the mistakes or the gaps that are left in there by being good enough, and this is maybe counterintuitive in some cases, or even a little anathema, it actually forces them to engage with you to some degree. Because, hey, I don't understand this, or I really like what I need to know is this. And so they come and we have a conversation. And that helps me understand more of what they need. It helps them, you know, be able to talk through things, because I think talking is a great form of learning in a lot of cases. And putting out deliverables isn't talking. So it gives you kind of a back and forth that is so critical to a lot of compelling intelligence practices, especially when you're all remote. I mean, that's something I didn't talk about, but we are 100% remote company, which I think makes competitive intelligence work much more difficult, because it's so relationship based that it's harder to manage those relationships and forge those when you're all, like, not everyone's going to turn their video as much as you want them to. And even then, you're still looking across the camera and you do lose something. So I try and force kind of some of those engagement moments, not by like leaving in errors, but by not striving to like, okay, we can't get to perfect, so let's get it enough we can keep moving and we can iterate and we can keep trying to find the right answers kind of as a group.
Yeah, sure. I think that's great advice. And that's something that comes up quite a lot when I'm speaking to people about like starting competitive programs from scratch, or for new people. It's like, just get to this kind of like a minimum viable deliverable, get it over to them, and then, yeah, you know, you can iterate on it and work from it from there. You know, if it's a battle card, the salesperson is going to tell you pretty darn quickly if it doesn't work, or if it's not right, or if they can't read it, or if there's too much information, because it's going to be frustrating for them to use, right? And
I have handed something to someone before. I don't remember. I think it was at a different job. And they're like, I don't think this is quite right. And I'm like, okay, let's talk about it. And then it's fixed. And guess what? You're one salesperson. We fixed together. Now we're giving that piece of information, that piece of intelligence, to a dozen other salespeople. And all of a sudden, we're now better equipped as a company to compete in our market. So maybe that's the other thing. This kind of is a summation of what you were saying. You don't want to be afraid of being wrong. Like, you don't want to be wrong all the time. But your job in any type of intelligence role is to pull out information and make sure the whole company has access to it. And one piece of advice that I got is, you don't always need to be the person delivering the insights or delivering the big wow moments. You just need to make sure that the whole company is getting access to those, so that everyone is benefiting from it, because that's going to elevate everything. So if someone else is bringing forward really great information, really great things, they're getting the stuff before you, that person should be your best friend. You should be talking to them all the time. You should be integrating them into your process to make sure you're getting all that great stuff because they have some good relationships. Don't be afraid of that. That's actually part of your job is to find those people and cultivate them. You know, it is going back to the old days of you know, CI 10 years ago, 15 years ago came from the actual intelligence community, like the government intelligence community. And that was part of the thing is cultivating relationships to get information. We still have to do that, even though what we're doing is quite different in many aspects.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And I wonder how many people go into competitive intelligence understanding from the outset how, you know, relationship-based the role really is. You know, it's something that, at least on the face of it, I think sounds very much like you've got your head down in a spreadsheet or, you know, you're working with data all day, but so much of it is about, you know, delivering that data to people and making sure it's in a form that works for them. And at the end of the day, I suppose it's a supporting and enabling role, you know, just as much or maybe even more than it is, you know, about the data itself.
Yeah, there's a lot of facilitation.
One other thing that really stuck out to me in your answer was those data packs that you mentioned. One quick question on those. Is that something that you... I imagine those are somewhat time consuming to put together. Is that something you sort of wait until you're getting so many kind of ad hoc requests for, can we have more information on this, please? They're like, okay, it's definitely going to be a time saver for me to kind of, you know, put all of those thoughts in one place so that people can kind of pull it and self-serve it. Or is it something that, you know, from the start, you're like, I know we need a reasonably detailed resource on, you know, these few competitors or these few points of what it is. Let me put those together now.
Yeah, that's a good question for that, because there's usually two goals I'm aiming towards. I'm either trying to deliver a recommendation, or I'm delivering an exercise that results in a decision. And with either of those, depending on the depth, yeah, that's when I define if I need a data pack or not. If it's an exercise, I absolutely am going to build a data pack, because part of building out those exercises, I mean, if we're talking about a war game or just some scenario planning or something like that, you're kind of the role of the teacher in the classroom. So you need to really know the information so well, and building a data pack guarantees you know that information and that everyone in the room is going to be operating with the same set of information. So that justifies the time that goes into developing these and building these out, because you really are not going to have a successful exercise unless you're saying, hey, we're doing this next week. Here's your data pack. You don't have to know it cover to cover. Be familiar with it. Sure. Bring it to class. You know, bring it to the thing. If it's in person, when you show up, there will be printed copies. So you will have a digital copy, but there will be a printed copy on the desk, the conference room, whatever, waiting for you, because you should have to reference that to answer questions that go through the exercise. You know, let's look at the pricing models. Great. Yeah. Page 12. Here are the pricing models that we're aware of for us and for our competitors, how they differ. Now let's have an educated conversation on how we can price more competitively or have a different pricing strategy to find success in this market. So for the exercises, 100% of the time, if it's really driven about a recommendation, yeah, only if it's something really massive, like a substantial market assessment or market expansion opportunity or a particularly large product enhancement that came through to us, will I actually build one of those. Normally I'll focus more on like a traditional, you know, I'll do some kind of executive summary or an executive summary PowerPoint presentation, something that is shorter, easier to put together, and just more direct to the point, because I don't need to lead them to water quite so much. I just need to show, here's the recommendation, and here's what led me to that recommendation.
Got you. Awesome. Well, Chris, we're almost at the hour mark. So I'd like to say thanks so much for your time and for coming on the show. You know, I always find myself saying this, but it's honestly so enlightening for me to have these conversations, to have these chats with people who are doing CI day in and day out, really. So thank you. And, you know, if it's a fraction as enlightening for our listeners as it is for me, then I think that's a job well done. So thanks so much again.
Yeah, it was great to be here. The big thing I've learned is I need to get caught up in this series, because I think it's got to be fascinating to hear what people in other industries are doing.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of the Compete Clarity podcast. Before you go, I've got a question for you. In today's job market, differentiation is really important. Interview processes today have 4, 5, or even more stages, and proving your worth is getting harder all the time. How valuable would it be to you to be able to bypass all of that in the eyes of the recruiter because they're already familiar with your work? Well, listen, we want to help you by offering you the means to do just that. We'll work with you to quickly adapt your work into SEO-optimized articles, ghostwritten guides, and podcast episodes just like this one. It's never been easier to differentiate yourself, so why not start today? Sound interesting? Just send an email with sign me up in the subject line to contribute@competitiveintelligencealliance.io. That's contribute@competitiveintelligencealliance.io.